Chapter 31 is where we are at, the end of 1 Samuel. This is the end of an era here in Israel. 1 Samuel 31. Nearly every book in the Old Testament ends with death, a curse, some bad thing. Usually revolves around death, which is quite a contrast to the New Testament. Anybody remember how the New Testament, the first book of the New Testament ends? Nobody? Resurrection and go preach the good news. And so you got the Old Testament, it's like every book is, it's somebody's dead. And then 1 Samuel's no different. This is the end of Saul's life. And so it's an interesting contrast. Shows you the difference Jesus Christ makes, really. But let's read 1 Samuel 31. It's not too long. Last day of Saul's life here. And I want you to keep this in mind. The point of this sermon is very simple. It's one point. And the point is, enemies that you don't deal with will destroy you. And I'm not talking about people. I'm talking about stuff like in your flesh. Stuff that you know, probably every one of you has something. Maybe it's multiple things, but there's something. Everyone has something that you know the Lord has said, you better deal with this. You better deal with this. And Saul, that's going to be the issue with Saul. 1 Samuel 31. Now the Philistines fought against Israel, and the men of Israel fled from before the Philistines and fell down slain in Mount Gilboa. And the Philistines followed hard upon Saul and upon his sons. And the Philistines slew Jonathan and Abinadab and Malchishua, Saul's sons. And the battle went sore against Saul, and the archers hit him, and he was sore wounded of the archers. Then said Saul unto his armor bearer, draw thy sword, thrust me through therewith, lest these uncircumcised come and thrust me through and abuse me. But his armor bearer would not, for he was sore afraid. Therefore Saul took a sword and fell upon it. And when his armor bearer saw that Saul was dead, he fell likewise upon his sword and died with him. So Saul died, his three sons, his armor bearer, and all his men that same day together. And when the men of Israel that were on the other side of the valley, and they that were on the other side of Jordan, saw that the men of Israel fled, and that Saul and his sons were dead, they forsook the cities and fled. And the Philistines came and dwelt in them. It came to pass on the morrow, when the Philistines came to strip the slain, that they found Saul and his three sons fallen in Mount Gilboa. And they cut off his head and stripped off his armor and sent into the land of the Philistines round about to publish it in the house of their idols and among the people. And they put his armor in the house of Ashtaroth, and they fastened his body to the wall of Bethshan. And when the inhabitants of Jabesh-Gilead heard of that which the Philistines had done to Saul, all the valiant men arose and went all night and took the body of Saul and the bodies of his sons from the wall of Bethshan and came to Jabesh and burnt them there. And they took their bones and buried them under a tree at Jabesh and fasted 7 days. Wow, that sounds like something that might make the news. Something you might see in some videos or something. It's particularly in Philistine country. You know, if they were able to kill a great leader and see him drugged through the streets, that may sound kind of familiar, something you've seen before. That's what happens with Saul. And he's killed, his family is killed, his men are killed, and all the folks that see this happen start to run, and they leave. I mean, they leave their houses. They leave everything exposed. And the Philistines, under Saul's reign, what happens effectively is the Israelites are just demoralized, and the Philistines gain ground. And that's the story of the end of Saul here. Here in the Old Testament, 1 Samuel, it's the end of an era for Israel, end of Saul's reign. He was the first earthly king of Israel. He wasn't God's choice, and the reality is no one was really God's choice. But when Israel wanted a king, a visible head on the earth, the Lord warned them, said, this is not going to end good. I don't want to put a throne in Israel until Jesus Christ. Of course, we can read all that back into it, but said, I don't want to put a throne in Israel, but because of your just persistence, I'll put a throne in Israel and I'll put your guy on it. So he put Saul on the throne, and then very shortly after that, the Lord went looking for another guy for the throne because it was just, Saul was no good. Even though the Lord never really wanted to put a throne there at that time in Israel. But he did so, and all of Israel's history is sort of revolves around that for a long time. But anyhow, Saul was the first visible king, or the first earthly king for Israel. And he was never a spiritual man. He never had any inclinations toward God. I think sometimes we think he started off well. He didn't really start off anything. He started off as a carnal young man that really had no inclination toward God and was a sort of an athletic guy and a celebrity and came from a wealthy family, and so that he was the guy they picked. And he never really had any hunger and thirst after righteousness. But it's interesting, and I'll mention this first thing. Saul dies in battle and warfare. And even people, especially public figures engaged in war, are remembered as heroes by their own nation. Really, I mean, it doesn't matter what their life consisted of. If someone dies in battle, we automatically say, sacrifice, they gave their lives, this person needs to be honored and remembered. And that's what we say. And that's one of the most, to me, one of the more compelling arguments that the Bible is the Word of God, because the Lord remembers Saul exactly the way Saul was. He doesn't promote him as honorable. He doesn't remember his sacrifice. He mentions all of the terrible end of Saul's life, how he's shot by first of all his sons are killed, the men around him are killed, then he gets hit with arrows, which kind of shows you where he is in the position of the battle. I mean, he's not leading it, he's hidden behind everybody else, and so he gets hit with arrows, he's dying. He doesn't want to be abused by the Philistines, so he falls on his sword. The Philistines find his body the next day. They take from his body what they want to take from him, and they chop off his head and put his body up on some wall as a trophy to remember. This is what we do to your people. That's what the Philistines want Israel to know. This is what we do to your people, especially your leadership. This is what we do. And when I read this obituary, and in fact, it's mentioned in 1 Chronicles as well, and I'll read it to you there too. But I just thought of the vast difference of the way men remember men versus the way God remembers men. I say God remembers men, it's just the way God presents their life and their history and what they did. You know, in Israel, there's going to be a great mourning. Even David is not, he's not going to badmouth Saul in 2 Samuel, and David is not, he's not angry towards Saul. He thinks it's a tragedy what's happened to Saul. He thinks it's terrible. But there would be if any leader dies in a battle, they're remembered as a hero, as a sacrificial, a sacrifice, someone who has given their lives for their country. But the Lord, he's not thinking the way man thinks. And when he remembers Saul, he just records the bitter end. In fact, look in 2 Chronicles. This is the Lord's obituary for Saul. 1 Chronicles chapter 10. And I say this is one of the compelling arguments or reasons you can understand this book isn't written by men per se, is because Israelites wouldn't write this stuff about a leader who died in battle. They wouldn't say these things. They would say he was a great, great man who did great things, and you know, he valiantly died fighting off the Philistines and he sacrificed his life. But here's what the Lord says about him. 1 Chronicles chapter 10, verse 13. So Saul died for his transgression which he committed against the Lord, even against the word of the Lord, which he kept not, and also for asking counsel of one that had a familiar spirit to inquire of it, and inquired not of the Lord. Therefore he slew him and turned the kingdom unto David the son of Jesse. Wow. That's not something normal patriotic people say about a leader who's died in battle. But it is something that God says. And the first point I want you to get out of this, at the end of this era, at the end of Saul's life, what you have and what we all need, when what you have is an honest obituary about what the enemy has done to Saul. And what God has told Saul to do, and what Saul's response has been, and then what's happened to Saul's life. I mean, it's incredible. I'm just going to say, we remember men and women and people in a good way because we don't want to think about anything bad when they die. We just want to have good memories. That's all we want. God is not in a position where he needs good memories. God is in a position where he can just tell you, this is what happened in this man's life. This is why he died. This is why he was given over to the Philistines. This is why I removed him from his position. God's not in a position of needing good memories. And so he is in a position to be perfectly objective about what's happened. And so when the Lord writes an obituary, it's not at all like what man would say. It's just what happened. So when he writes this about Saul and says it in 1 Chronicles, Saul disobeyed the word of the Lord, and he went and saw a witch because he would not listen to God. Therefore, I just removed him from the throne. That's what happened. That's the honest account of what happened. And here's what we all need, because we have this tendency. It's just inevitable. It's like we have this need to have something good said about us, people we love. We need that. And what is sacrificed in all of that is the reality and the honesty of what's actually happened here. This person dies of a drug overdose. Well, they were real great and charitable and all that stuff. You know what the reality is? They got hooked on drugs and they went too far and it killed them. That's the reality of what's happened in some people's lives. But we don't want to think about those things. So the first point of this, Saul's end here, you have an honest account, an honest obituary about what the enemy has done. Second thing is, in line with what 1 Chronicles said and what the Lord recorded about Saul's life, is Saul's sin. And that account in 1 Chronicles identifies Saul's sin. The Bible says, or the Lord said, he disobeyed God's word. From day one, Saul's job as the king, as the leader in Israel, was to lead Israel to fight off Israel's enemies, to keep Israel's enemies at bay, that was one of them, and to magnify God, to glorify the Lord. That's his job. He's I know you know the story. Anybody remember why David came to fame in Israel? You remember why it was? Because David showed up to a battle and fought a battle Saul wouldn't fight. The Philistines, and Saul's always under this tree. And he's just like waiting. And I think in his mind is probably what's in a lot of people's minds, maybe even our minds, is if I just ignore the enemy, eventually he just goes away. And what you forget is the enemy is here to steal, kill, and destroy. And that's all he's here for. If he pretends friendship, his motive is still to kill and destroy and steal. That's his motive. If he acts friendly, if he pretends to be your buddy, if he moves away for a while, his motive is still the same thing. And what I think what we get in our sort of the optimistic view of life, just like the optimistic view of death. The optimistic view of life is, well, if I don't address it, then it'll just go away, or they'll just grow out of it, or they'll just figure it out one day. If I don't address it, that's what Saul's thinking. If I don't address it, eventually, maybe the Philistines will just go away. Maybe they'll just stop fighting. And then somebody jumps to the front of the line who's willing to fight the battle. That's David. David fights Goliath. And Saul's not only envious that David's a celebrity, but he's willing to fight a battle and win a battle you're not willing to fight, Saul. Now, that'll make you mad. You watch somebody else have victory in their life where you don't have victory. And they get victory, but they got victory because they were willing to contend with the enemy. You're afraid to contend with the enemy, so you don't have victory. So you know what you feel about this other person? I hate this other person. I can't stand them. Why are they doing that? It's not that they're bad people. It's that they're willing to do something you're not willing to do. That's Saul. That's Saul's relationship with David. And so Saul, all through his life, he is unwilling to deal with the Philistines. And so he's got, even before David deals with him, you remember who dealt with him before David dealt with him? Jonathan. Jonathan goes and fights the Philistines. And Jonathan, he takes a couple guys with him, and he makes an attack in a Philistine camp and makes the Philistines run and all that kind of stuff. But over and over in Saul's life, you see him just sort of taking a back seat, a sort of passive, it's not even passive aggressive, it's just a passive sort of hope it all turns out right. I'm glad I'm a celebrity, and I hope it all turns out right. Jonathan fights. David fights. Saul, he won't deal with it. He just won't deal with it. He let others fight for him. His sin, what was his sin? He wouldn't obey the words of God. He wouldn't fight the battles he's supposed to fight. Because of his sin, he gets envious at David, who's willing to fight, who's willing to magnify the Lord in his life. He gets envious of David. That envy runs his life from then on. I mean, he hates David. But here at the end, he won't fight. His sin brings him to a place of utter hopelessness. He's suicidal. He's struck by the enemy's darts, the arrows. He's been hit with arrows. Because of his sin, he's become a source of discouragement. You notice when Saul's not fighting, all these other people around him are dying. And then when the rest of Israel sees what's happening, you know what they do? They run. You know what that is? It's discouragement. It's someone who is now you've allowed fear to grip the congregation because you were unwilling to deal with what you needed to deal with. So you've now let fear run through the Israelite camps, and now they're running. Not only are they running, they're abandoning their real estate. They're abandoning the promised land. They're getting out of their homes and allowing the Philistines to come filter in and occupy the space. It reminds me of that verse in Ephesians where Paul says, he says, give not place for the devil. It's like the arguments about, I don't know, they're not a whole lot of arguments about it, but you will get real animated sometimes whether, you know, you can get possessed or oppressed and whatever. You can give the devil space. You can give him a place. That's pretty clear. You can give him place, and if you give him place, then he occupies the ground. You can argue about oppression, depression, obsession, possession, whatever. The reality is he occupies the ground. The reality is the Philistines now occupy the ground. You can call it whatever you want to, but the enemy has the ground now. Why? Because Saul's just he's been unwilling. And the Lord has given him 40 years. He just gave him 40 years to do something about it. Unwilling to fight the battles he knows he needs to fight. He becomes a source of discouragement in verse 7 and loses ground to the enemy. Just understand, and think of the congregation. Let's make some application here. There are places in your life, places in my life, places in our lives. If you're unwilling to fight, it becomes a discouragement to other people. Other people watch. Other people see. Other people get discouraged. I know this is everywhere, and I know people work, and I get all that. But sometimes coming to a prayer meeting is a little discouraging. You got a handful of people, and you know more people could be here, but we're just not interested in prayer. We're just not that interested in it. What I'm saying is our decisions, our inability or unwillingness to deal with things that we have to deal with, what that bleeds out into is discouragement to other people now. Now, other people are discouraged because you're not going to be an encouragement. You're going to be someone people have to drag along the way. That's Saul. He won't fight. Now the Israelites are put in a position where the enemy is overtaking them. So now they're running for their lives. They're leaving real estate for the enemy to claim for himself. And not only that, Saul's become suicidal, he's become a source of discouragement, and then he's become now a trophy for the enemy. That's, I'm sure, for there was a time, you know, they take Saul, they find his body, they cut his head off, and they put his body on a wall along with his sons. I imagine on the Philistines, you know, Fox News Network, Philistine Network, these images are shown, and you know, maybe there's some blurred out stuff so you don't see it's all gory and everything, but this is the trophy. This is what this is what's happened. And it's not really a whole lot different than people do it today, just criminal activity and stuff like that. I mean, you've seen the pictures. I remember doing this. I was doing some research on Islam, and honestly, I mean, it was. I know there's some Americanized Islam. It's a little bit different than Islam. And I was doing some research. Man, I finally was like, I'm tired of looking at pictures and watching videos, people's heads cut off, and just this terrorist stuff. And it was for, I don't know, something for school. Anyway, so I'm doing this research, and I finally just stopped. I'm like, I'm tired of seeing this. I'm tired of putting this in front of my face. And this is what the Philistines do. I mean, it's just, this is how we treat our enemies. This is how we make a spectacle of our enemies. We just we plaster them against the wall, and we let everybody know, hey, this is what we do to your leadership. This is how we handle your best. Cut the head off, put the body on the wall, and let everybody know this is our trophy. We got this one. We got this one. Why? Why did they get this one? Because he was unwilling to fight the battles he should have fought. And the last point of this, and it's really the main point. Like I said, enemies that are not dealt with will destroy you. The enemy has come for one reason, or three reasons: to steal, to kill, and to destroy. He has no other motive. It's death, it's theft, and it's destruction. And that's it. You can play nice with him for a while, but eventually his motive, the motive is to kill, steal, and destroy. They don't reason. And if they reason, it's only to get you in a position where they can steal from you, kill you, destroy you. The enemies are the world, the flesh, and the devil. And Saul misunderstood his enemy. And what, you know what that tells you about God's words? Because the Lord had told Saul, you need to deal with his enemy. God's words are life. He was giving instruction on how to survive. You're going to have to deal with this enemy. And if you don't deal with this enemy, not only is it going to affect you, it's going to affect your children, and it's going to affect the whole congregation of Israel if you don't deal with this. Think about it. I mean, think about it in your life. What's the thing? What enemy? The Lord is clearly saying, you have got to deal with this. And if you don't deal with this, it's going to destroy you, and in the process steal from you, and in that process going to take a number of people down. Enemies not dealt with, destroy. Saul misunderstands the enemy. I think he thinks like most people think. You know, I don't think there's part of it might be that you're just if you're not looking for a fight all the time, you just don't really want to fight. You're just not, you don't want a thing to end up in a fight. But when you know the sin, this thing has bad intentions. It only has bad intentions. This lust only has bad intentions. This inordinate affection only has bad intentions. This greed, this covetousness only has bad intentions. If you can get that through your mind and understand that, then you'd be maybe, hopefully, more willing to deal with it. It's not enemies as people. It's enemies of the flesh, the lusts of the flesh that compete for real estate that belongs to God. It's laziness. It's apathy. It's pride. It's thinking I'm more than I am. And it's high-mindedness. It's anger. It's bitterness. Stuff you've given the enemy some real estate. You're just passive about dealing with things that need to be dealt with. And what you have here with Saul's life, he's just the personification of that apathy. You just get to watch it lived out in his life and realize how it affects people around him. How did it affect his kids? How did it affect his relationship to other people? I mean, you could really say a lot of Saul's relational problems with David, his trouble with, you know, with the Lord, things like that, are all due to his unwillingness to deal with things he should have dealt with. It wasn't that David was a bad guy. It's not that God's bad. It's that he's unwilling to deal with things, and then there's consequences to that. If you're not going to deal with this enemy, then this is going to happen. And if you're not going to deal with this enemy, then this other thing's going to happen. And you're going to have these feelings about these people. You're going to get mad at people who are willing to fight. You're going to get frustrated with people. You're going to envy people who have some victory. All of those emotions, I think it would do us some good to understand some of the sources and some of the troubles and some of the... Where do these emotions come from? Where do these feelings, where do these thoughts come from? A lot of them come from, they're just born out of sin and disobedience. I'm not going to obey God. Now I'm going to be mad at people who do. I'm not going to obey God. Now I'm going to discourage and frustrate people who are trying to. This is Saul. Enemies not dealt with, destroyed. That's all they're there for. The Philistines, I mean, you talk about relentless. I mean, you would think, okay, David kills Goliath. And I think that's sometimes our mentality about the Christian life. It's like, if I can get this thing, get victory over this thing or defeat this thing, then I've got it covered. David killed Goliath. The champion of the Philistine army. He killed the best man the Philistines had. Then what do the Philistines do? They come back and fight more. It's never put to rest. There's not an end to it. And unfortunately, that's sort of the struggle. Like we're doing it in Sunday school, talking about Jude, and he says, earnestly contend for the faith. Why do you need to earnestly contend for the faith? Because the struggle is real. Because there's constant opposition to serving God. There's constant opposition to doing the right thing. And if you're going to do the right thing, you're going to do the right thing on purpose, and you're going to have to do it with purpose, and you're going to have to do it with your heart and with your mind and with your strength. Saul is he's just the personification. He's a man who he's lived his own life. He's been put in a position that he didn't really deserve. He's not a godly man. He's not a spiritual man. He's just a carnal guy, a celebrity to Israel, and he's just unwilling to do what God said. He's never really had a concern about what God said in his life. And then you put him in a position of leadership, and he still doesn't really have a concern about what God says until it starts costing him stuff. And then all of a sudden, maybe he'll get panicked a little bit periodically. But ultimately, he's not going to carry out what God has said to do. You need to contend with these enemies. You need to get the victory. You need to deal with this stuff. And his unwillingness to deal with enemies leads to the truth and the reality. enemies not dealt with will destroy you. They only came knocking at your door for one reason. There's only one reason it's this thing is here. It's to steal. Now three. Steal, kill, destroy. That's the only reason it's here. And if you don't deal with it, if you don't deal with that sin, if you don't deal with that temptation, anger, that apathy, just carelessness, laziness, pride, lust, if you don't deal with it, eventually it consumes you. Eventually it takes more ground and then takes more ground and then takes more ground. You got to deal with it. You got to fight. You got to put up some sort of an effort. Put up some boundaries. Deal with these things. Contend with them. So Saul's end, and just like the Lord does in so many other places, I read this and I thought, you know, an Israelite would never have written this about a king who died in battle. It would never characterize the king's death in battle as, or his running, really. I mean, it looks like he's running away from the enemy. But Israelites would never, in their own history, record this characterization of their king's death in a battle. He died valiantly. He died sacrificially. He did so many great things for the nation. He brought us together and in so many ways and all this. But the Lord, he has an honest account. And you know what you and I need is an honest account. An honest reckoning of what is real, what is happening in our lives. A lot of things we, I think, I don't want to say pray for, but some of the stuff that you could probably you could say happens in your life and I could say happens in my life is because of enemies we're just not willing to deal with. We let them gain ground. We let them take territory. We don't want to fight them. We just say, you know, I hope it goes away. Maybe eventually as I get older, it'll go away. Maybe eventually if he gets older, it'll go away. Maybe if she gets older, it'll go away. Maybe if you know, I just don't answer the door, it'll go away. You underestimate and you're not thinking what your enemy's thinking. He's there for destruction. He's there to steal. He's there to kill. And no amount of imagining a better life is going to make him go away. No amount of optimism. Well, we hope it'll get better. No, it takes purposeful addressing. Deal with this. Deal with this enemy, Saul. Philistines, you got to deal with them. You're going to have to deal with them. You're going to have to deal with them, Saul. I don't want to deal with them. Maybe they'll forget about this. Got to deal with them, Saul. You got to deal with them. You know what the Lord's saying? I mean, think about it in your life. What's the Lord saying? Deal with this. You're going to have to deal with this. This thing isn't going away. It just isn't going away. And I don't know what it is. It's probably individual for everybody here. But you got something, and you know it's not going away. And you know when it shows up, you're going to have to deal with it. You got to contend with it. Otherwise, it's going to eat your lunch. And not only that, it's going to discourage. It's going to affect your family. It's going to affect friends. It's going to affect other people. Saul, you got to deal with it. Enemies who are left unaddressed. Enemies who are left unaddressed eventually destroy. That's what they're there for. Let's do this. Think about some things between you and the Lord. Think about Saul's life. Think about what it cost him. And not just in his death. I mean, his whole life was miserable. His whole life was miserable because of the decisions he made. His whole life was miserable because of his disobedience to God. And eventually the Lord just said, I'm done with this. I'm done with it. I'm done with it. Let's do this. So Sam comes and plays a little bit on the piano. Let's have a little time of reflection. It doesn't have to be too long, because I think we all know the most prevalent and preeminent enemy that we're not facing, that we're not dealing with. And we know what to do. We just need some encouragement to do it. Need some encouragement to do it. Sam plays, we can bow our heads, close our eyes. We'll think about these things. Think about Saul and his position and his personification of these truths. The enemy has to be dealt with. And he'll come back, and he's got to be dealt with again. Don't be discouraged by that. Just, I guess, embrace that reality. That's the way it is. At least this side of glory, that's the way it is.